I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
I am Iron Ferret.
Yeah. We're still on our Marvel kick, and Marvel-related, but not MCU-related, that new trailer for Venom, Let There Be Carnage.
I didn't see the first one. Yeah, the first trailer looked so bad. I will say that the this trailer, it looks like they got the Venom personality right.
Very childlike, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, I really liked the humor. I like the little bits like, you know, there's a sign reminding Venom that he can't eat people. You know, I like Venom trying to make breakfast for Eddie, but not quite understanding human taste buds, you know. Touches like that, where it's like you can tell the alien nature of Venom. The rest of it, I mean, maybe it flows better if you've seen the first. I don't know. You tell me.
It's fine. I mean, I had seen the first one. This seems to be following the first movie fine. It's still in the same sort of groove that the first movie had. My only problem with the first movie was that it felt like it might have been better made 10 or 20 years ago. It seems that that's going to be fixed for this movie. Especially now we have a new director. We got Andy Serkis. If anyone's going to understand that kind of CGI, the level of CGI that's needed for a superhero movie, it's going to be him.
The first Venom in the trailer especially, it was very bad about that. And I had trouble kind of following what the action scenes that they put in the trailer. In this one, I was very clear where everyone was at all times. Mm. And I really liked that. Please do more of that. Brighten your film. Either have faith in your CGI or don't use it. I don't know. I might be willing to go back and give it a chance. Especially as we are still in quarantine and I'm kind of running out of things to watch at this point.
At this point, we're both fully vaccinated, so we should be okay.
Well, yeah, but I'm still, you know, I'm still not comfortable in a theater. Where I live, we have an incredibly low vaccinated rate. Yeah, but I might give the first one a chance to see, you know, if I start to hear good things about the sequel. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Might be my litmus test. We'll see.
Yeah. So that when that comes out later this summer, I'm going to put a note here. If you're hearing some beeping noises and stuff on the podcast, there's some construction going outside my apartment, and I apologize.
Yeah, it's Chicago. The snow has melted. Construction season has begun.
Yeah. So let's move on to the other one we wanted to talk about, and that really got both of us excited. Muppets Haunted Mansion. The Muppets are getting their first ever Halloween special this fall on Disney Plus. They're doing something with the Muppets, something big like this, and I'm all for it.
So far, all we know about this thing is something, something Muppets, something, something Haunted Mansion, and that is enough to have both of us begging to see this thing.
You know, it could go one of two ways. Either it's a celebrity in the Haunted Mansion and all the characters are Muppets, or the Muppets are going into the Haunted Mansion and all the characters are celebrities. That's usually how Disney has done it since they've taken over the property. So who's going to be playing, like, the ghost hosts and Madame Leota and the hitchhiking ghosts and the quartet of singing busts and all that?
You know what? At this point, you could literally just rig up a special cart so that the Muppets could ride just, like, vanilla flavor Haunted Mansion and react to it. And I would still watch that as a special.
True. I just have a This should have a lot to do with Uncle Deadly. He is the only horror-themed Muppet character that they give a lot of attention to. So,
yeah. You gotta do something with them. Yeah, and they really, you know, the current incarnation of Uncle Deadly is really getting a lot of love.
Fashion Guru Deadly.
Yeah, I really, really love what they've done with the character since the ABC The Muppets series. So I am all in on that idea.
If only they were, you know, on good terms with, like, Sesame Street, and you can get, like, the Count in the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah. I wish there were less animosity right now because of the, you know, HBO Now or whatever, and the Disney Plus, and the, yeah.
I mean, I'm hoping that they'll work together for this upcoming Jim Henson biopic that Disney's working on.
Yeah, and recently ABC did host the 50 years of Sesame Street special, which was very good, actually, for anybody who hasn't seen it. So.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, we'll get some more information as we get closer to Halloween, and I'm looking forward to seeing the Muppets Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, I honestly do not care what the concept behind it is. They have already sold me.
Over under on an Eddie Murphy appearance.
I'm hoping very far under, 6 feet under, in a grave that we never access or think about or talk about again.
Okay, so let's move on to our main feature, Iron Man 2. It's been 13 months since we talked about the first Iron Man movie. So, you know, and we were doing this huge Fury's Big Month theme, and we got to talk about Iron Man 2. And it's been a while since I saw Iron Man 2, and this rewatch really made me remember how good this movie really is.
Yeah, this was the third film in the MCU entirely.
After that, yeah, and they took that 2-year break to decide, you know, as you should. If you're going to make a cinematic universe, make sure your first film is a hit before going all full cinematic universe. That is the main problem with a lot of these studios trying to make a cinematic universe, is they try to go full speed ahead off the drop before testing the waters. DC, Universal with their Dark Universe. I would even say Warner Brothers with their MonsterVerse, with their Godzilla and Kongverse. They need to get that first movie out, see what people liked about it, and make sure it's a hit before you say we're going to do an entire cinematic universe.
This is the film where the idea of the Marvel Cinematic Universe gels. Incredible Hulk was its own thing. You know, we talked about it last week of, like, people still question, like, is that even part of the MCU? Which it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more tenuously connected.
Yeah.
It's mentioned. It is technically canon to the rest of the universe. It's mentioned now and then, but you can kind of miss it if there. This is the first film where it's like, no, you got to pay attention now.
Yeah.
All this little side nonsense is going to be coming back for the next 13 years, you know?
Even one that we didn't even know was a clue and got retroactively made a reference.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Let's kind of get into some of the big things about this movie. Technically, you know, this was also the first recast. Yeah, we talked about Iron Man 1. Terrence Howard originally played Rhodey. And I mentioned back then in that episode that he was the first actor to be signed on for Iron Man 1. Even before Robert Downey Jr., even before Gwyneth Paltrow, he was the first actor to sign a contract to be in the movie. And as a result, he was the highest paid actor in that movie. Here comes the sequel. Robert Downey Jr.'s career skyrockets back into this big comeback as a result of Iron Man. And now he's an in-demand actor. He can demand more money. But because of the contract that he signed for the first movie, Terrence Howard wanted more money. He technically, that was his contract. Since he was already making more money from the first film, that he would be making more money for the second film, even maybe more than Robert Downey Jr. So, like we mentioned last week, how Edward Norton was eventually recast because of money, Terrence Howard has to go bye-bye because of money. And that was a decision apparently made by Marvel's head at the time, Ike Perlmutter. Ike Perlmutter made some not so favorable remarks. At least it is alleged that it was just replace one black guy with another black guy, no one will notice.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of Don Cheadle even before this movie. The Rat Pack movie that he was in when he played Sammy Davis Jr. I love that movie and I love his performance.
Got him an Emmy nomination.
Yeah, I loved him in that movie and I've been a fan of him ever since. So when I found out he was going to be in this movie, I consider Don Cheadle a much better actor than Terrence Howard. No disrespect to Terrence Howard.
Yeah, he had already gotten both the Emmy nomination for that Rat Pack movie, another one for A Lesson Before Dying and Things Behind the Sun. Mm-hmm. He'd gotten a Oscar nomination for Hotel Rwanda. And he was the co-producer of Crash, which won the Best Picture Oscar prior to ever being cast in Iron Man 2. So, I mean, Don Cheadle's career was going fine. Don Cheadle did not need Iron Man 2.
And I love how his introduction in the movie is. Like, you see him from the back, and then he turns to Tony and says, I'm here. I'm here. Let's move on. Perfectly referencing not only that, you know, he's there for the court, but this is Rhodey's face now. I'm Rhodey now. Let's move on and just get this done.
You know, I love how Don Cheadle ended up getting this part.
Go ahead.
I may have this wrong, and somebody please correct me if I do. But the way I understand the story was that Favreau or one of the producers, maybe Feige or somebody, knew that Don Cheadle is actually a huge comic book fan and had told somebody that he'd always wanted to do a comic book movie, but there aren't any black superheroes. Like, they don't make movies about black superheroes, so what's he going to do in a comic book movie? And so Marvel's got Rhodey. They got War Machine. They want to put him, you know, they want to have a black superhero. They got an opening for a black superhero. They need somebody to fill the spot, and they need somebody to fill it now. And basically they called him and they were like, hey, do you want to be a black superhero? You have a couple hours to say yes or no, and we can't tell you any more than that. Like, it was under such, like, strict security, you know, in
and we know how big Marvel is on keeping their secrets.
Yeah, and basically they called him and they're like, you want to be the black guy in a superhero movie, yes or no, tell us within 3 hours kind of thing. And Don Cheadle took that chance and was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to trust it. I'm going to do it. We'll see where this goes. So I like that he was willing to take that risk, which is interesting because in comparison to Terrence Howard, Don Cheadle had a little more to lose. I think he was a little more respected critically as an actor at the time, to be doing, you know, Iron Man was making a lot of money, but the MCU wasn't respected for like a critical kind of, I mean, I'm not even sure it still is, but I think people understand if a big name critical darling actor wants to go do an MCU movie now.
Yeah, I mean, we would get others. We would get like freaking Robert Redford in these movies. We're getting Angelina Jolie in one of these movies.
Yeah. It's more understood now that like, okay, you want to go be in the superhero movie, you go be in the superhero movie. It might not get you the Oscar, but you come back and you win the Oscar somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and there's one more cast change that it's not as big, and that'll be the recasting of Howard Stark. Gerald Sanders played, quote, Howard Stark, and it was just pictures in a magazine in the first movie. So he didn't actually do anything. And he kind of got, and then they recasted him with John Slattery in this movie because they actually had him doing something.
Yeah, John Slattery, probably best known to people for his long run as Roger Sterling, who was the boss on Mad Men. He's been in a lot of other stuff. He showed up on Desperate Housewives for a while. Bit on Will and Grace as Will's brother. But he was in that Wet Hot American Summer thing that everybody goes nuts for. I have not seen that. I hear it's good. I always like him when he shows up. He recently did a TV series which didn't last, sadly, called Next, which our friend and co-host for our Die Hard episode, Ian, got to be in a couple episodes of that as an extra. He does a really good Howard Stark. We'll get into that when we talk about it.
And it's amazing how, you know, John Slattery and Don Cheadle kind of been these linchpins throughout the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe from this point on. Yeah. And especially since Slattery is playing a character that's technically dead.
Hey, that don't stop nobody.
It's comic book. No one ever stays dead.
Yeah. So we got, you know, we've talked about all the big names before, and these lists will get shorter and shorter as we continue to go through the MCU. But we've got an introduction of another major character in this one. We've got our first appearance of Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow. Scarlett Johansson shows up, we talked about Robert Redford showing up in the MCU. Scarlett Johansson really breaks onto the scene in a film directed by Robert Redford, which was The Horse Whisperer. You know, appears in some weird stuff like Eight-Legged Freaks, but then as she gets older, she starts doing things like Girl with Pearl Earring, and then really, really hits it big when she shows up in Lost in Translation, directed by Sofia Coppola. And stars opposite Bill Murray. She starred in a Michael Bay film opposite Ewan McGregor that is actually a remake of a mystery science theater movie. Like, most people don't know it's a remake of a mystery science theater movie, but it actually went to court over it, and then the Universal or whatever paid him off to like shut up about it and not tell people about it. But it's a movie called The Island. And it's actually a remake of something called Parts the Clonus Horror that Michael Bay just stole full outright.
And yeah. She really wanted to make a Black Widow movie because she did Lucy and Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah, she does like these very bizarre action movies, which is, also what The Island was. So she's been trying to do stuff like Black Widow for probably most of her adult career. She gets that bit, and she starts training and training and training and training. I mean, more power to her, because it is said that she probably trained as much or more than any of the men did to get all those, buff helicopter curling kind of superhero looks.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the, you have to be know how to do some of these moves, especially in shots where your face is seen.
And she's I'm not saying that she did all of her own stunts,
Yeah,
of
that's crazy.
course, but she does a lot of the stuff. You can see her face in a lot of some of the flips and wire work that she does. So, good for her. Moving on, as one of our two villains here, as Justin Hammer, the evil industrialist
The
weapons,
anti-Tony Stark.
the anti-Tony Stark, we've got Sam Rockwell, who I freaking love. Who doesn't love Sam Rockwell? Come on. Everything he's in, he is amazing. Galaxy Quest alone should just net this guy like some kind of special award. I don't know. But I also loved him in, Moon. He was really good in Frost Nixon as well. Jojo Rabbit,
Which also starred Scarlett Johansson.
which also Scarlett Johansson, both of them were amazing. I don't think there was a single bad performance in Jojo Rabbit. That is an incredible film. He can go back and forth between these really goofy characters like Galaxy Quest and his Zaphod in Hitchhikers. Then he goes and does these incredibly down-to-earth everyman characters. Really incredible range on the guy. And his portrayal of Bob Fosse in Fosse Verdon is one of my favorite things on the planet.
And
Just
Sam Rockwell's got the moves.
yeah, he really he has danced in almost every single film, which is why Hammer has that strange like coming out on stage and doing a little dance and every it just that's Sam Rockwell puts that into like every single film he's ever done, I think.
Sam Rockwell actually almost played Tony Stark.
Yeah, I think he would have also made a good Tony Stark. I think that Robert Downey Jr. is just slightly better for that role.
If they had decided to go younger with Tony Stark, I could see Sam Rockwell.
At this point, I am convinced Sam Rockwell could play any character on the planet. All right, as our primary villain, as Ivan Vanko or Whiplash, which he's never actually called that in the film. He's
Also,
just.
technically Crimson Dynamo.
Yeah, they do base him a little bit on Crimson Dynamo from the comics. We've got Mickey Rourke. I mean, yeah, that's pretty good. You might know him from The Rainmaker or Get Carter.
He was amazing in The Wrestler.
He was probably best known for The Wrestler. I mean, that got him the Golden Globe, the BAFTA, Oscar nomination. He didn't win for that. But of course, he's also in The Expendables, Immortals. He really took to this and suggested a lot of things to make Vanko more fully fleshed out as a character.
Which got thrown out by Marvel.
Well, he wanted him to have like the pet bird,
The gold teeth, yeah. And the tattoos were
the
all Mickey Rourke.
tattoos. He wanted more Russian dialogue. He really did. You're right that a lot of his suggestions on humanizing the character did get thrown out by Marvel.
Rourke recently did an interview about this and how he wanted to make the character more three-dimensional as a human, and Marvel was very much one-dimensional villains, and he's not wrong.
But as we've seen, Marvel's gotten better. I mean, this was their third film. We're still in the early stages of them trying to humanize Tony Stark. For them to have a fully fleshed out villain at this stage, I think might have been asking a little too much. And we've got one kind of notable, slightly larger than a cameo, but not really a fully fleshed out character, but he'll keep coming back. We've got the great comedian Gary Shandling showing up as
Senator Stern.
Senator Stern, yeah, who apparently was named after Howard Stern. They named him after Howard Stern, according to Jon Favreau. Yeah, so like we said, stand-up comedian also had It's Gary Shandling's Show and the Larry Sanders Show back in the day. Unfortunately, he was one of those people that 2016 took from us. He will become much more important in retrospect to the MCU. So it's worth noting his appearance here. Wanted to kind of mention a couple of people behind the scenes. We have a kind of interesting person who worked on some storyboards, especially with the Stark Expo and the design of the Stark Expo. We have animation legend Genndy Tartakovsky. You'll know him for having been the creator of series like Dexter's Laboratory, Samurai Jack, Star Wars: The Clone Wars.
Director of Hotel Transylvania.
It kind of interesting to see his style sort of translated into live action, which is interesting. At the Stark Expo, you also hear a song. I kind of nicknamed this song It's a Great Big Beautiful Stark Morrow. It's actually called Make Way for Tomorrow Today. It's the Stark Expo theme. And the reason it sounds so much like It's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow is because it was written by Richard M. Sherman, one of the Sherman brothers.
There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful.
And this was right after Disney bought Marvel, so they had him at their disposal.
Was it right after? I thought this was before.
Disney bought Marvel in 2009. Although they still had the contract with Paramount to release a number of movies. So that is why when you watch this movie on Disney Plus, it has the Paramount logo.
I really thought that this was before. But yeah, okay. Makes a little more sense now, some of the things we see in this movie. But yeah, and that is an earworm, and mostly because it really does sound almost exactly like It's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow.
And it kind of goes with the Walt Disney-like presentation that Howard Stark gives in this movie.
Yeah, I dare you when you see Howard Stark come on at the first video at Stark Expo. I actually, in the rewatch, was just like, "Hi, I'm Walt Word Stark." It's so
And
obviously.
yeah, it's definitely based off of Disney's presentation of Epcot.
Everything is achievable through technology. Better living, robust health, and for the first time in human history, the possibility of world peace. So from all of us here at Stark Industries, I would like to personally introduce you to the city of the future.
The fire, the most important part of our Florida project. In fact, the heart of everything we'll be doing in Disney World will be our experimental prototype city of tomorrow. We call it Epcot.
It really is fascinating to me how they dressed the whole thing to look like that. Yeah. Even the way that John Slattery moves, like his body language in some of those clips, you really do feel like he went back and watched footage of Walt. It is interesting. Let's get into the actual kind of plot of this one.
So the movie picks up right at the end of the first Iron Man with the big reveal that Tony reveals himself as Iron Man. But we see it from a different perspective as we see Ivan and his father Anton looking at the news program. They're just angry, and Anton says, it should have been you. This is, you know, they stole my technology and they're making a profit off of it. And now he's for lack of a better term, he's a superhero off my work. And Anton dies, and then Ivan just goes, after mourning, goes into really a recreation of Tony creating the arc reactor from the first movie.
And I'm just going to say that at this point, the only people who cannot make an arc reactor out of a box of scraps are the actual paid engineers at Stark Labs.
Here is the first big hiccup of the timeline, as this only takes place 6 months after the first Iron Man.
Interestingly, I did read someone who went and tried to reconcile the timestamps we see, like what little bits of things we see on screen in the various movies with what we see in the Fury's Big Week comic, and mm-hmm. they were really, really obsessively thorough. Bravo to fans like that. Really, really love you guys. And they figured out that it really does seem like while there are outliers, most of the evidence does place this in May 2010.
So, yeah, the movie proper starts with the Stark Expo that Tony wants to bring back the legacy of his father by bringing back his what Tony believes to be his greatest achievement was the Stark Expo, bringing together scientists and other technological geniuses from all over the world. It's a world's fair of technology. And he says it's going to be there for a whole year. That would mean that the Stark Expo was going on during the events of Thor and Hulk.
This seems to be the start of it. It is possible that the battle at Stark Expo and the battle in Harlem probably take place within 24 to 48 hours of each other.
Can you imagine being a New Yorker like that?
Ugh. Being a New Yorker in the Marvel universe is probably just constant, like.
Because, you know, here's this week where drones are attacking the biggest collection of scientists in the world, and then two big rage monsters are fighting downtown Harlem, and then a year later there's an alien invasion. But the main thing here is Tony is having some blood poisoning thanks to the palladium core in the arc reactor. It's while the arc reactor is keeping him alive, the palladium is poisoning his blood. As Jarvis would say later on, the very thing keeping him alive is also killing him. So he has to.
Irony.
Yeah, so he has to figure out some kind of new power source for the arc reactor, or he's dead. And he's already tried every combination of every element known to man, and nothing is powerful enough to sustain the arc reactor long enough or not poison him. So
yeah.
It also leads to Tony getting reckless. Like, if he's gonna die, who cares? He's gonna do whatever he wants. Very similar to in the comics where Tony was a known alcoholic and much like that would just get drunk and do whatever.
Yeah. This kind of makes me annoyed because this is our version of Demon in a Bottle. This is the closest we ever get. And as I mentioned in our Iron Man episode, The first thing anybody said when Robert Downey Jr. was cast was, oh my God, we're going to get Demon in a Bottle, and it is going to be fantastic. And this is what we got instead. And I'm not saying that this is a bad movie, but I would have much rather gotten Demon in a Bottle. It was a superhero struggling with addiction.
Which has been revisited many, many times in both Marvel and DC.
Yeah. And Iron Man was one of the first and one of the biggest. And it would have been cool to see that on screen. And especially with someone who has been publicly, you know, upfront about his own struggle with addiction. It would have really given that weight. And I'm kind of sad we never got to see it.
So let's move on. Tony has been summoned to appear in court, and the Senate wants what they call, as Senator Stearns calls it, the Iron Man weapon. He has this weapon, and the U.S. government wants it, and Stark is saying, no, you cannot have my weapon. You cannot have the suit. Even, you know, saying that it's not a weapon. You know, as we saw in the first movie, Iron Man or Tony Stark does not want to make weapons of war anymore. And he just wants it all for himself. He's not going to give it to the government.
And at this point in the movie, he does have a bit of a... He does have a bit of an argument that he could do, which is that the suit is entirely powered from his body. Like, it is powered from the arc reactor in his chest. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, there is kind of only that one, because all the others have been destroyed so far as everybody else knows.
Yeah.
That kind of gets flushed down the toilet later in the movie. But at this moment, at the trial, that suit's kind of useless without Tony Stark. Because as far as I know, Tony is the only person that could pilot the suit. But this scene always kind of pisses me off. I'm just going to be honest.
Go ahead.
And I do think it sets up Tony's eventual character arc by the end of his time in the MCU, of course. And it really is, like, by the end of his time in the MCU. I mean, it takes forever to get him there. But it really shows us who he is kind of at the beginning of his run, which is the ultimate Ayn Rand profiteering, ultra-capitalist, individualist, objectivist hero. I am the man, I make the rules, I decide because I have the money and the power. And you can't tell me what to do. Get out of my room, Mom. You know?
It's another, you know, layer on it when we find out about Senator Stearns, when we find out in Captain America and the Winter Soldier that he's actually a member of Hydra. Hydra wants the Iron Man suit.
And yes, you can say that Tony is vindicated for this behavior in retrospect because it helps Hydra not have the thing. And there are all sorts of ethical things to be made, and you know, Captain America makes them later in Civil War about giving this much power to a single government entity. Okay, I'm here for all of those ethical arguments. But that also does not make Tony right here. I'm the capitalist, I funded the project, therefore I get to fly around the world shooting wrist missiles at whatever I want, neener neener. My property, which is kind of his only claim here. Mm-hmm. My property rights. That, like, I built it, I own it. It doesn't matter if I can blow up an entire country regardless of international law. You know, like, my property, yeah. My money. Yeah. So, to me, this is kind of... I kind of think of this like Tony starts out as, like, you know, ultimate Ayn Rand perfect selfishness. And then by Civil War, he starts to realize, like, oh, yeah, other people exist and ethics are a thing you should have. And empathy is a thing that maybe helps build society. And it's imperfect and there are still ethical problems with it, you know, and... The good thing about Civil War, and we'll get to that when we get to that, is that I don't think you can say either side is perfectly right or perfectly wrong there. Mm. But yeah. I think you can say that Tony is mostly wrong here.
In this moment.
In this moment. Now, granted, I think that Dern is... also probably mostly wrong. Like, I don't want the U.S. military as portrayed in this movie to have a fleet of Iron Mans either.
Yeah.
I don't want Hammer to have a fleet of Iron Mans. Like, there's basically nobody in this movie I want to have a fleet of Iron Mans at this point.
Especially considering in later movies, Tony has a fleet of Iron Mans.
Yeah, and...
twice.
And what he does with them is okay, but also a little bit sus. Like, you're still walking a line there, Tony, you know?
You're stepping into fashy right there, Tony. Little bit. You got your toes in there.
Little fash there, Tony, yeah. I kind of respect that the MCU started with, let's take one of our douchiest heroes and pull him back from the line into being, like, a really... kind of noble figure by the end. But at the start, including in this movie, Tony is not a good person.
No.
I'm sorry, if you watch this movie and you're like, wow, I really admire Tony, he is really a bastion of ethics, and that, no, go see a therapist now. Go see a therapist now. Tony Stark is not a hero in this movie. He happens to do good accidentally. He happens to end up on the wrong side accidentally, but it is not an ethical choice Tony makes because of any internal moral compass that Tony has.
So let's enter Justin Hammer, who says, you know, he has this video there that other countries are developing their own Iron Man suits and weaponry. Granted, Tony then hacks the broadcast and shows that, you're about 10 to 20 years away from where I'm at right now.
Look at North Korea. North Korea is being, like, silly and goofy. Let us all laugh at North Korea. Ha 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 ha. Okay, I'm outie. Bye. Yeah.
And it's just that being Iron Man has, rather than humbled him, just inflated his ego.
Yeah, but, and also, he thinks he's dying. I mean, he just wanders into the Senate floor, like, with, like, a whiskey or something.
Yeah. He's home in the L.A. mansion that we saw in the first movie. But, Pepper is just going off on Tony. You're getting reckless. You can't be doing this. And your actions is hurting the company. So he gives up his position in the company. Makes Pepper... the CEO of the company, when technically she's already been running the company all these years anyway. Might as well make it official, which does kind of get her some criticism later in the movie due to the cameo from Bill O'Reilly.
Ugh.
But yeah, it's the news kind of it's in the background, but the news kind of digs into Pepper is that she was known as professionally as a secretary, and now she gets the job as CEO of one of the biggest technological companies in the world.
The thing is that it's because, like, I would wager most CEOs, when we actually find out about what goes on behind the scenes, is that I don't think Tony is really that different from most people who run these giant businesses, is that there's always somebody, regardless of gender, like Pepper, who, as we see in the first movie, Pepper has been running this company for years. He doesn't know his own social security number. He doesn't know how to do anything but sign his name. He has no idea what projects they're working on, where he's supposed to be that day, the name of the girl he was with last night. Like, he doesn't remember what day of the week it is. Pepper just does things, says, sign here, go there, say this, and he just does it. And then he gets all the glory, and she's the secretary. So when she gets the actual official legal title and theoretical respect, you know, when she should be getting the respect, she's just like, wait, wasn't she a secretary and now she's a CEO? Why doesn't she have to work her way up? It's like, no, she's been CEO for like 10 years. You just haven't noticed that she's just been like puppeting a useless dude.
Yeah.
You know? And honestly, I think that's how most of these are, that there's probably one person or maybe a team of people that actually do the work, and then there's just a figurehead who walks around going like, we do stuff! And then they get their picture in, you know, the cover of Time. And they're like, wow, what a genius! You know?
Yeah, and as all of this is going on, Vanko, he's developing the Whiplash technology. He's getting forged documents to enter different countries, starting his revenge plan. We'll get back to him.
I want
to
make one thing clear, is that we see that Tony is keeping the palladium poisoning at bay with some kind of like kale smoothie or something.
It's that kind of concoction that someone will drink saying, I'm detoxifying myself.
Yeah, except in Tony's case, it actually does work for short periods of time.
But it doesn't work for very long, because every time we see him check its blood, the poisoning is higher and higher and higher.
And we do know that through his conversations with Jarvis that he keeps having to drink more and more and more to get less and less effect.
Yeah.
But it's just keeping it at bay through some combination of chemicals that he's come up with. And Jarvis desperately tries to tell Pepper, but Tony mutes the thing.
Let's enter Natalie Rushman. The new assistant.
Eagle. Yeah.
Yeah, the new assistant here. It's kind of flip-flops within its own movie whether he's Tony's new assistant replacing Pepper, or now that she's Pepper's assistant since she's the CEO.
Well, yeah, she initially comes in just to bring the papers from legal to sign over ownership of the company. Mm-hmm. Like, she just comes in like, here's the paperwork from legal, you sign here, you sign there, okay, you're CEO now, and Tony's just like member of the board or whatever.
Yeah.
And Tony immediately is like, no, I want her to be my new assistant. I'm going to need a new assistant. I mean, you're CEO now. Somebody's got to, you know, whatever. And Pepper's like, no, we are not paying for that sexual harassment lawsuit. Thank you. No.
Especially the way Tony looks at Natalie here.
Yeah.
This very young, beautiful, red-haired woman who apparently can take down a former professional boxer in Happy Hogan.
Yeah, because Happy is teaching Tony how to fight. Yeah, and when Tony leaves the ring to sign the papers or whatever, Happy for some reason decides he's going to try to hit on Natalie by teaching her how to box, and she immediately, like, takes him down.
Great head scissors.
Yeah.
Honestly, if this is 2010, Natalie Rushman could totally take Ronda Rousey.
Yeah. But what's so funny is Tony makes a joke about like, well, that looked like a TKO to me, Happy, and Happy's like, no, I just slipped, and I'm like, no, Black Widow doesn't do a TKO, she does a TPK.
And this thing with Natasha here, her cover is good because she already has her name on the internet of her entire backstory, as well as an entire portfolio of modeling pictures.
Yeah, she was an underwear model in Tokyo. Like, what?
It's part of the Rushman character, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know why. Why was that necessary? Why? Tony was already gonna want her around. I mean, look at her. Tony didn't need to see underwear pictures.
You gotta wonder how Natasha would feel like, I have to take these underwear pictures. It's for the mission.
Those were photoshopped. You know those were photo. You see her skill with computers later. Those were photoshopped.
But yeah, Natalie, as we still know her here, shows her skills, and Tony straight up says, I want one.
And Pepper's immediately like, no.
We do know that Tony has an affinity for redheads. Yep. As do most Marvel comic superheroes. Spider-Man,
yeah,
Wolverine.
Yeah, that is true. There are a lot of famous redheaded love interests in Marvel comics.
Yeah. So we move on to Morocco at the Morocco Grand Prix. Tony is there. He's got a car in the race. He's sponsoring.
And they're really there to show off Pepper as the new CEO.
Yeah, that's really there.
They're there to hand the baton off in that kind of flashy way.
And Natalie is there for some reason. Even Pepper is surprised that Natalie is there. And this is where Tony says, she's my new assistant, because you're the CEOs now. And you get a cameo from a recent SNL host. Yeah, Elon Musk is in this movie because they used his facilities, the SpaceX facility, for Justin Hammer's facility.
Tuesday?
Go ahead.
We're a PG-13 podcast.
Yeah.
That means we get one F-bomb, right?
One F-bomb.
I need to use that F-bomb.
Hide your kids. Cover your kids' ears.
Fuck Elon Musk. Okay, we've used that one F-bomb. You're going to have to bleep the rest of these. Seriously, fuck Elon Musk. Fuck him and his union busting and his COVID denying and his apartheid profiteering. And you're just... with a vibranium cactus.
I think you used every F-bomb for the rest of the year in that one.
It was worth it.
Moving on. Hammer is also there. We get the reporter from the first movie back. She's doing a story on Hammer and realizes that Tony's there and kind of wants to do a story on Pepper becoming the new CEO, and Pepper makes an offhand remark how she did a spread for Tony last year. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more.
Yeah, I mean, Pepper's a little shamey.
Pepper is very jealous of women that give Tony attention.
Pepper, you just got a company out of this. Like, do you really need the D that bad? Fire him and get your own D. Come on.
So anyway, Tony is realizing that the blood poisoning is getting worse. Looks himself in the mirror and tells himself, I got a bad idea.
His time to F1.
Yeah. Fires his driver, and he's going to drive his car himself because his explanation is, if I own a race car, I should race it.
That race driver thinks that that is the worst moment of his life. And within about an hour, that race driver is going to be like, I just dodged the biggest bullet.
Yep. So Tony is in the race. Here comes Ivan going full whiplash. He's going to kill Tony Stark in front of the world. And
I will say that it is really only the fact that F1 cars are built with super amounts of safety features, or Tony would have been very, very dead.
So about every other driver in this race.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, as far as we know, the other drivers also survived, it's because F1 cars are built to be ridiculously safe.
Seeing this is going on television, Happy and Pepper race to get Tony the Iron Man suit, the suitcase suit, as many people have called it.
Yeah.
And they're able to succeed. Happy just runs Ivan right into the walls, or straight on with the car. Why is he not dead? Because plot armor, I suppose.
I mean, that was full on. I guess the cage he's wearing to protect him from the electricity might also be another form of shock absorber.
Maybe.
But.
So yeah, he gets the suitcase suit on. A little bit of note here, I've got to mention earlier, this is the first Iron Man movie to not have an on-set suit. The first
CGI. Yeah.
Yeah, the first movie had a physical suit that Robert Downey Jr. wore. This one, all CG. So Robert Downey Jr. is actually wearing a mocap suit for the suit-up scene, at least.
It holds up really well. I mean, 10 years later.
Better than the Hulk CGI from last week. Tony is able to take down Ivan. He gets arrested. And
Tony really does suffer.
He gets the hell beat out of him. And before
the suit barely holds up before he gets one of the repulsor beams off and is able to take down Ivan and is able to pull his kind of arc reactor model, out of him.
He'll take this note and improve the suit, and then it'll absorb lightning from a god of thunder.
Yeah.
So yeah, destroys the arc reactor. He looks over the specs of it and everything. And Tony eventually meets up with Ivan after he's been arrested and talks to him, saying, "Hey, your tech's pretty good, but your numbers were off." I mean, you're kind of giving him props for the technology he made, but hey, you had a chance to kill me and you missed. And Ivan has a great line here is, if you make God bleed, people will stop believing in him. Words that will come back. All that for a drop of blood. Because we see Tony give the same thing he's able to get one good shot in on Thanos, makes him bleed one drop to show that Thanos is not invincible. So this is a nice callback, even if it wasn't intentional or not. It was a nice callback.
But Ivan gets his own kind of repeated thing here at the pre just as he's being arrested, which is you lose. Yeah, it looks like I'm on the bad end of this, but look how much you just lost to get me to this point.
Yeah, you got your butt kicked. Your armor got tarnished. Probably doesn't know about his blood poisoning, because that's probably increased because of the fight.
Yeah, and the entire world just watched him get his butt handed to him.
Yeah, the entire world just saw a guy beat up Iron Man.
Just a dude. I mean, a dude with, electric whips, but like a dude. We see as soon as Tony leaves the prison after talking to Vanko, in which, like you just said, he gives him props for his tech, but he accidentally lets slip how he can make it better next time, which proves a wrong move.
Yeah.
Tony, you're a little too hubristic there, Tony. But we see that pretty much the second he walks out of that prison after talking to Vanko, the news media is already like, is Iron Man finished? You know? If random dude can just wander onto the track at the Grand Prix and beat the crap out of Iron Man, do we need Iron Man?
Vanko doesn't stay in prison very long as he's broken out by Hammer. Hammer sees he sees what Vanko did and is impressed and wants Vanko to work for him. Make him an Iron Man suit and we'll take down Tony together.
This is a pretty ingenious breakout where he sends him like a lump of plastic explosive disguised as mashed potatoes. And then he sends him a dude that looks almost like him to be the corpse in the explosion. Mm-hmm. And then he sends a couple of guys dressed as guards to put a bag over his head and drag him out of the prison in the middle of the chaos. I mean, it's really a well-planned escape. So bravo to Hammer for his... I don't know if he's meant to be working with Hydra, you know, which hasn't been introduced yet. Like, if we're supposed to retcon that in our brains or... This is a really impressive amount of logistical know-how.
Who knows?
For this random, like, prison in Monaco in a very short amount of time. Like, he breaks him out within, like, an hour or two. Come on. This is a lot of moving pieces to put together in a very short amount of time. Hammer is either one of the best logistics guys we've ever seen, or he's, like, called up Hydra or something on the down low, and we just never know because we never revisit the storyline.
Yeah, and after all of this, Pepper and Nat are just trying to cool out all the fires because of what happened. You know, several calls from news media and from the board and all that, just trying to cool everything down. And Tony is looking up Vanko and looks up his father, realizes that they work together. Vanko did say, you know, your family are thieves. Your family stole from my family.
And Rhodey shows up to, like, snap him out of it, snap him out of his funk. And he's like, you know, Rhodey, is it possible that my dad did something to him, you know? My dad was never that nice to me. Maybe my dad was the bad guy. I don't know.
Daddy issues, which is Tony's other storyline for the rest of his time in the MCU.
Yeah. And Rhodey starts to pick up on the fact that something is wrong with Tony. He sees the lines on Tony's neck that are coming from the poisoning, but Tony's like, no, it's just a road rash from when I hit the pavement at the Grand Prix. It's fine. It'll be fine. Come to my birthday party. It'll be great.
So we catch back up with Vanko and Hammer, and Vanko has created drones, not suits, saying that the drones will be better because a human makes mistakes, a machine doesn't.
It's people make problem.
But yeah, so anyway, we speed ahead, the drones and all that. We are here at Tony's birthday party, and he kind of has the closest thing to a heart-to-heart that this version of Tony Stark can have with Natalie about it, you know, if you knew you were going to die tomorrow, what would you do? And Nat here says, I do whatever I want with whoever I want. And again, if you didn't know better, you would imply that these two are going to get down. But not very good advice, Nat, as Tony kind of goes full I'm rich F you at his own party.
Yeah, he puts on the suit, he gets really, really drunk, and he makes a total Richard of himself.
He pees the suit.
Yeah, which he says is fine, because there's a filtration system in there. It's totally good.
Yeah, he's trying to force a kiss onto Pepper, which he has never done in any of the movies up to this point. And yeah, we get the cameo from DJ AM, who unfortunately passes away before this movie came out. The movie is dedicated to him.
Yeah. Apparently they loved having him on set so much that he was supposed to be on set for like one day for a couple of hours to just film a really short cameo. They kept bringing him back to set for about a week, and he ended up giving Jon Favreau DJ lessons on set between takes. They said he was a really great guy and he was really nice, and everybody just really liked him and they were really sad when he died. So
here comes Rhodey. First we see Rhodey, he's on the phone with his superior saying, by the end of the night, Tony Stark will be under control. Good going with that, Rhodey. He gets in there, he sees Tony out of control, and he goes down to the basement and he puts on the Mark II Iron Man suit, the all-silver suit that we saw before, the one that crashed into the ceiling with the icing problem. And him and Tony have a fight in the entire building while he tells DJ AM to give him a fat beat to beat his best friend to.
Yeah, I love that you get a something that comes back later in the movie, because when Tony is drunk and there's the drunk girl at the party and she starts throwing the bottles in the air and he's hitting them with the repulsor beam and they're blowing up and everything, and all, it's like, oh great, shattered glass over a room full of people, this isn't gonna go great, you know. And then it comes back later in the battle at Stark Expo.
Yeah.
I really like that. I really like how they tie these two scenes together in multiple ways. This battle with War Machine and Iron Man, and then the later battle at Stark Expo. There's a lot of little tie together, and I really like how they did that.
And so. Yeah, Tony is completely out of control. He starts yelling at the partygoers. He is completely off his rocker at this point. Anyway, and it kind of ends with them holding up the repulsor lasers to each other, blasting each other, and there's a big explosion in the mansion. Knocks out Tony, and he comes to just...
And, like, half of the mansion. It blows out, like, one whole wall of the mansion.
Yeah. And Rhodey sticks around just enough for Tony to regain consciousness to say, I'm taking your suit, and this leaves with it, saying, you don't deserve to have this. Again, not knowing that his friend is dying.
And the interesting thing is, we find out later from Black Widow that Tony has fail-safes in place to stop people from taking the suit.
Yeah, unauthorized access. So
he could tell Jarvis to completely shut down the suit at that point.
Yeah, but he didn't.
But he lets Rhodey take it. He's agreeing with Rhodey at that point. He wants someone else to have the suit when he's gone.
Which is a nice reference to the comic, because when Tony could not be Iron Man, Rhodey was Iron Man in the comics for a good long while.
Yeah.
And even if those fail, and because of those fail safes, if Rhodey was not a authorized user, he would never have been able to use the suit in the first place.
Yeah, so Tony was planning ahead for this, just like he was planning ahead for Pepper.
Yeah.
So I like that, even though it's not specifically stated in the film, you can kind of put together those pieces.
Yeah. So Rhodey takes the suit back to the military, and it's that one scene kind of explains why it kind of has to be Rhodey in the suit for the rest of the movie. There is a deleted scene where they try to bypass the security and it doesn't work. And they just resign to, yeah, it's got to be Rhodey, because Rhodey is the only one that's authorized to use the suit, and they're just going to let him do, use it. Whatever.
Interesting that this particular suit seems to have its own arc reactor as well.
Yeah.
So it was another thing that Tony seems to have planned for that we're not specifically told about, but it's there.
And because it's not in the arc reactor is in the suit and not in the body, the palladium is not an issue.
Yeah. I like the little details, and I like that they don't spoon feed it to us.
Yeah. So as the next day after all this is going on, Tony is just eating donuts, and when he meets up with Nick Fury.
I wonder if Samuel L. Jackson demands that he gets the weirdest line in any film he's in. Because
I'm asking you to leave the donut.
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask you to leave the donut is one of the greatest lines ever. But I love that Tony is just hanging out in the Randy's Donut.
Yeah.
It's a great shot. Nick Fury shows up and he's like, Stark, you need to get your shiz together. Also, this is Black Widow. She's not Natalie. She's mine. Stop it. And now we get the entire backstory of Vanko and Stark seniors.
Yeah, Vanko worked with Stark and was embezzling to other countries. And that's why he was fired. Maybe Stark went a little too far by having Vanko deported. But yeah, he was embezzling technology, embezzling money to other countries. So yeah, broke that trust and was gone. And even Ivan was in and out of prison for also aiding America's enemies, of sorts, kind of.
Yeah. And it was the Soviets who got a hold of Anton and sent him to a gulag. It wasn't, I mean, maybe Howard should have made sure that Anton got sent to an American prison.
Yeah.
You know, but instead he had him deported. So yeah, probably lack of forethought on Howard's part.
It also was, I believe this was the 60s, 70s, who knows. But the Vankos are not innocents in all of this. Yes, they did work.
Well, Ivan probably was initially, because he would have been a child.
Yeah.
He's roughly Tony's age.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, he would have been a child. He would have probably been radicalized because of what happened to his father.
Which we would also see later on with Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver.
Yeah. So, yes, he made his choices. Again, it's an explanation and not an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Anton definitely made his choices. So what happened to Anton was kind of on Anton.
Yeah. Also, Fury lets Tony know that Howard is a founding member of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And he left you a bunch of secret documents.
And this would come back, because we would see young Howard Stark in Captain America, and we would see the older Howard Stark in S.H.I.E.L.D. in later films, like Ant-Man.
Yeah, and we also see Tony get to go back in time and see his dad.
At S.H.I.E.L.D.
S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah. Later on in the series. So, yeah, it all comes back. All comes back.
Yeah, everything's connected.
And this leads to one of my favorite scenes in this movie. No, scratch that. It leads to my favorite scene, bar none, in this movie, where Fury takes Tony back to the remnants of Tony's house with all these boxes of secret material that Howard left S.H.I.E.L.D., and we get Coulson!
Yes, Agent Coulson is back.
Yay! And Fury goes, you know what? Natasha's got better stuff to do. I got better stuff to do. Coulson deserves a break, so he's going to stay here. He's going to watch Super Nanny, and he's going to tase you if you try to leave the house. Have fun.
Yeah.
But I just love the idea that they're just like, Coulson, you get the run of whatever is left of Tony Stark's wonderful mansion. Order in some food.
You're Tony's babysitter for the rest of the
week. And Tony just goes down to the basement and works on stuff until he cracks this.
Yeah, basically, you know, your dad left you all the tools to create this new element. Find it.
Yeah.
Little did we know that this new element will actually come into play later. And I don't mean in this film. As the Fury's Big Week comic reveals that it is this very element that they're using on the Tesseract. That laser beam that they're using on the Tesseract at the beginning of the movie, that's the element. So Fury isn't all I have to, I'm worried about Tony Stark's life, is I gotta make sure this space cube works. Back at the military, they're trying to figure out how the War Machine, or the future War Machine armor works, when in comes Justin Hammer. And Hammer is going to weaponize the suit, and he brings out all of these guns with fancy nicknames like Uncle Gazpacho and the ex-wife. And if Justin Hammer was still making weapons in the MCU today, I guarantee one of the big guns would be called the Gender Reveal.
Probably.
So yeah, he's gonna soup up this suit with every weapon he has, as Rhodey just says, I'll take it all. Put every weapon you've got into this thing.
But yeah, he wants to study it, he wants to upgrade all of the software inside of it, he wants to soup it up, he wants to add weaponry, he wants to, you know, bells and whistles.
Well, he got what he wanted. He wanted one of Iron Man's suits, and he's got it, and he's going to play with it.
Yeah, and he's going to study it, and he's going to figure out how to replicate it, and, you know.
Yeah. So, Tony now has all of Howard Stark's old material at S.H.I.E.L.D., documents, stuff like that, and he pulls up something that he's never seen, which is the outtake reel of the Stark Expo movie. Where you see a very young baby Tony Stark playing around with the model. And finally, he just is so tired. He just looks at the camera and talks to Tony. I have the ideas, but the technology isn't there. But the technology will be there in your time. And tells Tony that you have to finish my work. You know, you have to make this a reality. Everything you need is here. Just make it exist.
Here's the thing. Just before this, you know, you said, oh, in the background, we see Tony playing with the model and everything. Nick Fury says, oh, you know, I knew your father, and your father said that his son was the greatest thing he ever invented, and you were going to change the world, and you were his greatest creation, blah, 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 blah. And Tony's like, really? Because he was a total jerk to me. And Nick was like, no, he left all this stuff for you. And he's like, really? Because he didn't believe in me at all. And then he watches it, and you see that to young Tony, Howard is like, why are you in here? Why are you playing with that? You're going to break that. Where's your mother? Somebody take the boy out of here. Take him to his mother, you know, stupid kid. And then he looks at the camera and he's like, Tony, you're going to be a great inventor. You are going to do all the things that I couldn't do and everything. And it's like, how do you know? You don't know your child. You just yelled at your child and sent him out of the room. Like, maybe that child wants to be a painter. You don't know. Have you sat down and taught him chemistry? Have you talked to him about physics? I don't know. Have you helped him memorize the periodic table? You don't know anything about your child.
It's mentioned very early in the first movie that he was a genius from a young age, built all of these things when he was essentially the age he is in that film. And then graduated college at a very young age because of his genius. And I assume that's what Howard's building on. Like, he's already a prodigy in terms of technology. He could make this happen.
Can I say something about that, though?
Go ahead.
Have you ever met like a seriously advanced going to school, going into college at a really young age kid?
No.
I have. I've worked with kids like that. They're not the type of kids who are back there like picking up models and putting bits on their head and wandering. That is not the same kid. Okay. And I'll forgive the movie. Like, if you've never worked with kids like that, like, you know, young Sheldon, yeah. That's that kid, like mm-hmm. spot on. Seriously. That's how kids like that act. Okay. I wasn't that kid by any means, but I was closer when I was a child than, you know, what is portrayed in the movie. But like, you know, whenever I've worked in or, you know, with or around children that are that accelerated, they are kind of miniature adults. So if Tony was like the genius kid who got into college early and everything, like if he was in that room with his dad, he would be like, hey, dad, this diagram, or oh, look, there's a typo over here, or like he would be insufferable and into everything and asking questions, and he would be like mini adult into everything. Okay. And also pick a lane. I don't care which lane, but pick a lane, you know. But also, like, pick a lane with Howard. Mm-hmm. Does he believe that Tony is going to change the world and, you know, that this is his greatest invention and I don't have the technology, but you're going to fix it or whatever? Because if you believe that, then you should be teaching him and working with him and talking to him about your ideas. Or is he the father that was never there, never believed in you, never, that Tony thinks? And I'm not saying there can't be wires crossed there, but this movie has them living in two completely different realities. I'm just saying that this shows two completely different Tony Starks. The one we hear about in the first movie and the one we see wandering around the background in these films. And two completely different Howard Starks, the one that Nick Fury remembers and the one that Tony remembers.
That, as someone, I can honestly sympathize with Tony in that one, in that when my father passed, I've heard stories from friends of his and family who talk about him, and I was like, that is not my father at all. That is a completely different person. I don't know who you're talking about. We knew two different people, so I can understand Tony in that regard.
Well, yeah, and like I said, there is definitely cross wires, and you definitely have, you know, people are not the same people to their children that they are to their peers. That's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But the way that they set up that Howard thought of his child and intended a life for his child, and then the way that he treated his child in reality, because we see the way he treated, so we know that Tony isn't just misremembering things. We see the way he treats Tony in that film reel.
And this kind of does come back in Endgame, where Tony does meet his father at S.H.I.E.L.D.
And yeah, that is true.
And he, you know, Howard just tells him, is like, you know, he's going to be a handful, but there's nothing I wouldn't do for that kid. So it's like, you know, it's like he loves his child. He just probably doesn't know how to express that love. Which, considering the generation that Howard comes from, makes sense.
That is true. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just this always sits weird with me. Mm-hmm. This, like, you know, he was really a sweetheart. He just yelled at you all the time. Like, he loved you on the inside. The outside was awful, though. Like, I don't know.
So let's get back here. Tony ends up going to Stark headquarters of the Stark Industries office building and tries to have this heart-to-heart with Pepper. And he's just botching it completely. He brings over strawberries, which turns out Pepper is allergic to strawberries.
The only thing she's allergic to, it turns out.
Yeah. And he tries to apologize, then he says he's not going to apologize. And it, as this is happening, Pepper has no time for this because she has a business meeting with several higher up, several other industry people at the Stark Expo, where it's revealed that Hammer is giving a presentation.
Yeah.
So she has no time to play Tony's games because she actually has to do her job, which is now actually her job.
Yeah, that she is officially has the title of instead of just doing it while Tony gets the credit.
Yeah.
And you know, Natasha's got stuff to do. Happy's got stuff to do. Everybody's got to do stuff. Excuse me. Everybody's got to do stuff, and nobody's got time for Tony. You know, and Tony's really sad because he hasn't told any of these people he's dying. Although, you know, Nat's figured it out.
Nat already knew.
Yeah, Nat already knows. They've given Tony an injection that will slow down the palladium poisoning while he works on this that S.H.I.E.L.D. has developed. But she's the only one who knows.
So as Tony is now all alone in his former office, and you can see a bunch of boxes put up, which likely are Tony's belongings, you see the model of the future city of tomorrow that Howard was looking at, that Howard was sitting on in the film reel. And he looks at it, and he notices something. We don't know about it yet, but he just takes the entire model in his car, broken up, and he puts it back together in his basement at the mansion. And he realizes that the entire city is done in a shape of an atom. And it is the atom of the new element that he needs to cure his palladium poisoning and to keep the arc reactor going.
Yeah, and so he basically puts up like a what are those called? An accelerator?
Something like that. I'm not sure what it's called.
Yeah, he puts up like a forge? Like an
A forge?
No, like an atom accelerator.
Go with it.
Yeah. But he puts up like an accelerator in his basement. He builds one from scratch because he can do that.
Yeah, he puts holes in his hall, he puts holes in the walls of his house because it doesn't fit in the one room. He's taken power from the power grid in his mansion to power the whole thing up.
Here's what I want to know is he's basically doing all of this by hand, and I'm just thinking, like, you have like a whole bunch of suits there. Why do you not put on the suits to help increase your strength and speed and stuff?
Because that'll increase the palladium poisoning.
But you're about to cure the palladium poisoning. It will take longer to do it by hand. You know, he's there, and I know it's supposed to be like to show off how buff Robert Downey Jr. is with his tank top and stuff like that. But like, come on, like, put on like an arm or something, you know, to turn that wrench with.
So here comes Coulson saying that he's been reassigned. Something's turned up in New Mexico. Gee, I wonder what that is. And he's been reassigned. He's going to go. And he rummaging through Howard's stuff, he pulls out a prototype Captain America shield.
Yeah, I like that.
And considering we find out how much of a big fan of Captain America Coulson is, he's a psychic. What is that doing here? What are you doing with this? You know what this is?
Yeah. Sorry, you said something about New Mexico? Go away.
Yeah. And Tony just uses this Captain America shield as to hold up the pipes of this atom accelerator. And considering what we find out about later, Tony's own resentment towards Captain America, it makes sense.
Yeah. But, you know, he kind of destroys more of his house trying to get the laser in place.
Yeah.
But eventually gets it all working correctly, and we hear Jarvis go, "Congratulations, sir, you have created a new element."
So, what is this new element? In the novelization of Iron Man 2, it is called Vibranium. But they backtracked on that because of Black Panther and all that, the Vibranium already exists. In Fury's Big Week, it is said that Stark is trying to copyright the name, or patent the name, Badassium.
We're earning our PG-13 this week, aren't we?
Yep. You already dropped an F-bomb, I think I can say that. So, yes. Because Tony would call his new element that.
Yeah, that sounds very like Tony. Also, it sounds very like Tony to have an entire African country discover an element, and Tony's like, "Yeah, I invented vibranium. You want to see this thing that I, a white man, invented?" Yeah. It was left to me by my father, another white man.
Where did he get it from? I don't know.
Somewhere in Africa, where he found this shield also made out of this thing, what he invented. It was forged by a black guy that he knew, but he totally invented it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Hammer is having golf with Senator Stearns. Yeah, that's That tends to happen a lot in politics. Businessmen having golf with politicians never happens in real life. Never. But having a conversation on the cell phone with Vanko about what's going on, it says that the programming isn't finished for the drones, and all I can do is make them salute, that they won't be able to do anything else because they don't have enough time. You never gave me enough time to do them, have them a full demonstration.
Yeah, they don't have any weapons. They will just be able to salute. You'll have to have something else there if you want to present anything more impressive.
And he says he does. He does have something more impressive. That is exactly what he wants, which of course we know is the War Machine armor.
Yeah. Play into Vanko's hands. Go ahead. Yeah. Do that. You're a smarty, aren't you, Hammer?
As we see that Vanko is working on his own weaponry. New weaponry made from the resources of Hammer Tech. Way to go, Hammer.
Yeah, you're a smarty.
But Hammer isn't happy because he asked for a working prototype and he won't have a working prototype. So he decides to have a tantrum and take all of Ivan's stuff. Takes his shoes, takes his bird, takes his pillows, says, "Hey, we had a deal and you didn't live up to your end of the deal. And I'm going to leave my security guards to be your babysitters while I go and try to salvage this poop show that you gave me." Of course, the security guards are dead within minutes.
Yeah. Should have given those security guards red shirts.
Yeah.
But, Tony is, looking over his badassium that he just created, trying to figure out if it will work inside the arc reactor, he gets a phone call and he's like, "Oh, S.H.I.E.L.D. has, restored my phone service," because they had cut it so that he would have to sit there and work. And he picks up, and it's Vanko. And Vanko's like, "Hey, what's up, dude? I'm not dead. And I'm about to have a lot of fun. Bye." And Tony traces it to the general area of the Stark Expo. Figures that Pepper is probably in danger. And decides, we can test the arc reactor in my chest.
And it works, because all of the... Palladium is just disappears as he's turning it on. says it has a taste of coconut.
That would be awful. I absolutely loathe coconut. I'd be like, oh, it tastes like coconut.
I mean, if you had this life-saving thing that you take and it tastes like coconut.
Yeah, but I take a lot of medicine and it's always like, oh, it tastes like icky cherry. Like, why couldn't they make it taste like a good flavor?
I specifically asked for chocolate flavor. I was at the pharmacy and I said chocolate flavor.
I wanted orange. But yeah, so he gets suited up and starts heading to New York. But you know, here we get our nice Sam Rockwell dancing.
Yeah. As Hammer is presenting the drones, and he makes a nice little presentation of it. Hey, we're gonna have the new. The way he says it is, you know, I'm tired of seeing our brave men and women in the military get hurt in the field of battle. So we're gonna replace them with drones, and for every single branch of the military, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, as each respective theme song of that branch of the military plays as these drones are rising from the bottom of the stage. I gotta admit that actually is a pretty nice musical cue. Honestly, good on the soundtrack on that.
Yeah.
Really. And the main attraction, the star of it all, will be Colonel James Rhodes, decked out in the War Machine armor, that he will lead this new drone force for the military. As Tony arrives and tells Rhodey, hey, these people are in danger. Draco's alive. Ivan's alive. These people are in danger. We need to get them out of here. And
yeah.
Questioning Hammer, where's Vanko? Where is he? I don't know what you're talking about. And no sooner than this happens, Vanko activates the drones. They are armed. They are ready to go. And poor Rhodey in the War Machine armor is stuck in there as his suit starts firing on Tony.
Yeah, and like I said, we get the parallel to the party scene where all the glass starts falling on the people.
Yeah.
In the audience, and you have everybody running. And here we have the Iron Man suit and the War Machine suit fighting against each other, but now here are all the drones as well, which it turns out are fully weaponized.
Yeah. And not only are they going to kill or trying to kill Iron Man, they're trying to kill the Stark legacy as they are. A lot of them break off from firing on Tony and just start situating themselves at different points of the Stark Expo and just start firing on people.
Here's the interesting thing. I looked this up and everywhere I looked it up, there appears to be no mention of actual casualty, as in death, fatality. I'm sure there were lots of injuries. Mm-hmm. You know, falling glass and, you know, sprained ankles and broken bones or something. But as far as actual fatalities, this battle never gets mentioned again. Like, even when the Sokovia Accords come up, yeah. I don't think this ever gets mentioned as one of the, you know, Battle in New York gets mentioned a lot as having fatalities and all this other, but Battle of Stark Expo seems to have been a zero fatality event, and I am fascinated by how that happened, because it really does look like somebody should have died.
Vanko wasn't trying to kill anyone. He was just trying to kill Tony and ruin the legacy. Unless Vanko is that good at programming.
No, but I mean, just, you know,
collateral damage,
stampedes,
kind of deal? Yeah.
Building shrapnel falling, ricochet from bullets. I mean, seriously, stuff happens. That many people panicked in an area, you would have expected, you know, something to happen. Somebody gets scared enough and has an asthma attack that leads to a death. Like, you would have expected some fatality.
Yeah.
But, Yeah.
So as it's happening, Natasha takes down Hammer and tells him, where's Vanka? Where is he? And tells him that he's at this facility and is just tells Happy to she's going to steal Happy's car and drive herself to Hammer's facility and get Vanka. Now, Happy doesn't know that who Nat really is and say, I'm not going to let you go alone. I'm going to drive you. I understand where Happy is coming from this because he's trying to be the, chivalry and all that. But the girl literally can kick your butt. Let her do her job.
Well, also, it's not her job as far as he knows.
Yeah.
And she's trying to take, like, Mr. Stark's personal, theoretically armored car.
Yeah.
Maybe you're going with her. I can kind of see where Happy's coming from, and I don't particularly think it's just like White Knight protects the pretty girl. It's kind of like
his job is bodyguard. That's his job.
Yeah. Who are you and why are you? You know. But I do like that. I do like Pepper in this scene. Mm-hmm. Pepper immediately takes over everything else. Tell me exactly what you know. I'm calling in the cops. I'm taking over this situation. Technically, we own this land.
Yeah.
You are in my building. These are my computers, probably. Like, you know?
Yeah.
She just immediately shuts Hammer down, takes over his people, takes over all of the equipment and stuff, starts giving orders. When the cops get there, she starts directing them on how to evacuate the area, you know, because this is the Stark Expo. They own it.
Yeah.
She would be in charge here. And I like that they remembered that in the movie.
She's the CEO. She's showing herself to be a leader.
Yeah. I really like that.
Yeah. So meanwhile, the Hammer drones have landed in front of a small boy wearing an Iron Man mask. And he holds up his little flashlight arc reactor like he's going to do something.
Yeah.
Cute little guy. And Iron Man himself kind of flies behind him, hits him with the arc blast himself. Gives him a little, hey, good job, kid. It flies off. Now, in this movie, this kid is played by Favreau's son, Max. But it has since been retconned that this is Peter Parker.
Yeah, tiny little baby Peter Parker.
Baby Peter Parker. Baby Peter Parker would go to the Stark Expo.
Oh, totally.
Like, we saw how much of a Tony Stark fan he was before. In the other movies, how much of a tech junkie he is himself, how he essentially makes his own web shooters and everything later on. He likes tinkering with junk. So yeah, he would go to the Stark Expo to see. My question is, where's Aunt May? I kind of want to know the other side of this, where Aunt May is running around there saying, Peter, where are you?
Well, yeah, I mean, she's probably just behind a building somewhere, caught in a panicked stampede, running the other way, going, Peter, who's seen Peter? You know, I mean,
my boy, where's my boy?
You know, she's probably like 200 feet just on the other side of the camera, you know.
Aunt May, Iron Man saved me.
Sure he did. Okay, let's get out of here, you know.
Let's go home.
We're going to go get some larb. It's going to be fine.
Can we get some ice cream on the way home? Sure, Peter, whatever.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Happy and Nat are on their way to the Hammer facility. As eyes on the road, Happy. That's all I'm going to say about this scene. Eyes on the road.
Yeah, Natasha has to get into her Black Widow costume in the back seat. And Happy does appear to be a gentleman.
Yes.
Good for him.
I mean, yes, there's this very beautiful, attractive woman undressing in the back of your car. But yes, your job is to drive her, drive.
And you know what? That is probably not the first undressed woman he's had in the back of that car.
He works for Tony Stark, of course not.
Yeah.
So they may, as all of this happened, they make it to the Hammer facility, and they, Black Widow is able to break in, and again, Happy tries to assert himself in fighting off of the guards, and then we get this awesome badass scene, which shows you how badass Black Widow can be, and she takes out all of the guards in the Hammer facility.
Like I said, Happy gets a TKO, Black Widow gets a TPK.
And honestly, apparently this is the footage that Taskmaster is looking at in the Black Widow trailer.
Nice.
So this does come back.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll, again, the Black Widow movie as of this recording is not out yet. But we'll see when that does come up. And, yeah. Yeah. But when I remember seeing this whole scene in the theater of just seeing Black Widow just give the beat down to all of these people, all of these guards, and it's like, okay, you got me sold, Scarlet. You are the Black Widow.
Yeah, this is a really well choreographed scene. It's very short, but it really showcased, like, this is what she can do, and we're going to put her to better use in later films. And they did.
Yeah. I love how they ended the scene. Well, there's like one guy left. She doesn't even waste her time and just maces the guy.
Yeah. And then I love it going back to Happy, like, I got it. Oh. Okay. Like, and there's just like 12 bodies just like strewn about.
Yeah, and Black Widow is able to hack through... Ivan's gone, if you see. Ivan's gone.
Yeah.
I see. But she's able to hack through Ivan's systems to at least bring... give Rhodey control of the War Machine armor.
Yeah. We kind of skipped over the part where Tony was able to bring the War Machine suit out of the air and unfortunately had to knock Rhodey out in order to do that. But by the time Rhodey comes to, the War Machine suit has rebooted thanks to Nat, and he has control of the suit back.
And there's this nice little comedic, as not only as Nat used the computer to hack into the War Machine armor, she's hacking into Tony's armor. And getting some communications with him. Also seeing that the palladium poisoning is no longer an issue. And there also puts Pepper on the line. And Pepper's like, wait, you were dying? Wait, what's going on?
Yeah, and she accidentally lets it slip that he had been dying and now he isn't anymore.
That is a case of, if you won't tell her, I will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't say that I really blame her, but, you know, maybe don't insert yourself into other people's
never told Pepper. Tony would have never told her. And she needed to know. So now Rhodey is back in control of the suit, and we get this cool fight between as War Machine and Iron Man are fighting against the Hammer drones, and it looks really awesome. Meanwhile, Hammer is getting arrested for his part in all of this. And he's kind of laughing at the whole thing because, oh, yeah, now you're acting like a real CEO because you're getting rid of the competition. I'll be back. You'll see me again. No, he won't.
Yeah, he's never came back.
Well, we'll see him again, but we're going to save that for the Iron Man 3 episode.
Yeah. I like the bit where War Machine and Iron Man are fighting the drones, because I like the kind of posturing between the two friends, because it's gentle about, you know, oh, you put the big gun on the higher ground and everything. Oh, no, I'm the big gun. No, you have a big gun, but I'm the big gun, you know. And then I like the bit where Tony tells Rhodey to get down, and then he releases that laser beam that just cuts all of the drones in half. And Rhodey's like, maybe you should have led with that. Like, Why have we been spending all this time fighting them hand to hand if you could have just cut down like 8 of them at once, dude? Like,
I can only do it once.
Yeah. So I did. There's a lot of humor in that fight, and I really like it. And it really shows their friendship.
It kind of goes back to something Fury said earlier, where he referred to Rhodey as little brother, and it's very much a brother relationship between the two.
Yeah. But then Nat tells them that there's another drone incoming, and it looks different.
This is not a drone, as Whiplash has gone full Crimson Dynamo.
Yeah, he's got his own suit.
Yep.
And he flies in, and the whips come out, and it is time to throw down.
Yep.
But Rhodey knows what to do, because Rhodey got the upgrade.
Yep. And it's a nice little callback to earlier in the movie saying, "Hey, I need my sidekick." You're serious? You want us to do this? Yes, I want us to do this. Hold your hand up. And they, much like the fight earlier in the movie, they both fire their repulsor lasers at each other, causing a big explosion, which takes down Vanko. I want to say Drago. That's a different. Ivan Drago is a different character.
It is. You kind of skipped ahead on me a little bit. I was talking about the bit where Rhodey was gonna use his ex-wife.
Oh, the ex-wife.
He got the upgrade.
Yeah, I got the ex-wife. The what? And the ex-wife peters out.
Yeah, I just love that where he like it fires up. You get that like whirring sound as it gets ready to fire.
The music swells up.
Yeah, it fires and then it just like pinks off the armor and just falls into the water. And Tony just goes, "Hammer tech." Yeah.
But yeah, they're able to take down Vanko. And Vanko even says, you know, he kind of does win in the end here. He says, you know, he's maybe down, but he's going to destroy the legacy of the Starks one way or another. He may not be able to kill Tony Stark in that moment, but he's going to take down the Starks legacy. And that is the Stark Expo itself, as he's rigged every single drone to blow. Obviously, no time to defuse any of these things, so they need to get out of there. And the first thing Tony does is go after Pepper, because Pepper is still at the expo. He gets her out of there just in time for the explosions to go off. I think this is the end of the Stark Expo.
I mean, at least the physical buildings.
Yeah.
I am going to say I gave Pepper credit for, you know, taking charge and being a CEO, and you know, I'm gonna take back all of those points for this scene. Pepper, sweetheart, darling, when the machine made by the bad guy starts blinking bright red and beeping ominously, you don't stand there and cock your head at it like a corgi looking at a treat. You turn around and run as fast as you can, because that thing's about to blow up in your face.
But you know, Tony was there, luckily.
I mean, I guess. And but seriously.
She does end up giving him an earful afterwards. Like, what the hell was going on? What's going on? You were dying and you didn't tell me? But, you know, the two reconcile and have their big romantic kiss. As, you know, they're now officially a thing. And you gotta wonder about Pepper, the fact that she stayed with Tony this whole time, you know?
Yeah, well, As a friend of mine once told me during a conversation about bad exes, Everybody poops.
Honestly, Pepper probably could have done better than Tony.
Oh, Pepper could have definitely done better than Tony.
It's the thing about the bad boy you can change, and it's a bad lesson to learn in this movie.
Yeah. By the end of the story arc for Tony, Tony is a better person. Mm-hmm. You know, phase three MCU Tony Stark has some redeemable qualities. Maybe you can date phase three Tony Stark. Maybe you can consider that guy a hero. Phase one Tony Stark is almost irredeemable. He is accidentally on the right side. He's accidentally a hero.
And Rhodey is right there saying, "Aw, ain't that sweet?"
Yeah.
Can you give us some private time? Oh yeah. By the way, I'm keeping your suit.
Yeah.
We'll be seeing more of War Machine in later films.
Yes, we will.
So it's a couple of days later. Fury has brought Stark in to S.H.I.E.L.D. to give him the debriefing over what happened. And Tony sees the folder on the Avengers Initiative, which is immediately taken away from him by Tony saying, "Hey, you may not want to read this." But what you can read is Natasha's report on you. And he lists all of Tony's, she lists all of Tony's flaws, self-destructive behavior, narcissism, egotism. And while she agrees that Iron Man would be a great asset to the Avengers, Tony Stark isn't. And even Tony's confused about this. Like, how can you say you want me, but then also say you don't want me? And that's, yeah, it's because of that self-destructive behavior that he's a loose cannon. He can't really be trusted to be a member of the Avengers. All the while, a certain news report is going on in the background of a green rage monster at Culver University.
Yep.
But they keep Tony on as a consultant. And we talked about that last week, too. But Tony says, "You can't afford me to be your consultant. However, I will waive all of my monetary fees if you do me one favor." And Fury asks what that favor is. And Tony says, "Well, the city wants to give me a medal for what happened at the expo, and I'm going to need a presenter." And there's Gary Shandling, Senator Stearns, the character of Senator Stearns would rather be anywhere than there to speak good things about Tony Stark and give him a medal.
Yup, but yeah. I love that he has to turn around and say, like, good work, you deserve this.
Yeah, and
but he does get his own back a little bit at Tony, because he ends up stabbing him with the medal and then says something about, like, see how annoying a little prick can be or something.
Yeah. At this point, we can kind of go to that ends the main part of the movie, but we can go to our post-credit scene, which features everyone's favorite S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, Agent Coulson, arriving in New Mexico, saying that it's here, and then we see a hammer in the dirt. But that's for next week.
My favorite part of this is that I love that as soon as you see the hammer and the screen goes black, you hear like a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Like, I just love that little audio bit in there. Like, you don't see lightning or anything. It's not overdone, but it's just like a really subtle, like, lightning crack
Yeah, if you didn't what it was about, if you didn't know who Thor was, that gave you the hint.
Yeah.
I remember seeing this movie in the theater when it came out. And when that scene happened, there was this guy in the theater who said, really? They're making a movie about Thor? And who knew? 10 years later, how popular Thor would be.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll get into this more next week as we talk about it, but, you know, Thor, to comics fans, he was liked. I had friends who were really into Thor, but he was also kind of a bit of a joke. Even Stan Lee made the joke when talking about Thor, like, Thor was just an excuse for Stan Lee to use big words.
Verily.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, verily, yon mortals, for I have come down. Look, it is I, the Odin son. I will come down and drink mead with you. Like, it was, you know, it was a dude from New York trying to sound like an old English guy trying to sound like a Viking and failing. Like, it was really ridiculous, you know?
Yeah. But we'll get there next week. So let's ask the question, does Iron Man 2 have the magic?
What say you?
I'm going to say yes. And this is actually a good movie on its own, and also in the greater MCU of what it ended up setting up. Of, you know, Tony is a complete Richard in this movie. Yes, he is. But it's still a good movie. I still enjoyed myself watching this movie. So yeah, I say it has the magic.
I will also say it has the magic. I'm a bit more qualified on it. Not the best Iron Man movie. Not the worst Iron Man movie. It's enjoyable enough on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Not as enjoyable as the first.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But it is very much Phase 1 Tony Stark.
Yeah.
That is the big qualifier. Like, your enjoyment of this movie really depends on how much you can get into allowing Phase 1 Tony Stark to be a protagonist.
Mm.
I can allow that because I understand that watching a main character and agreeing with a main character are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am the chick that is looking forward to the Loki series. Like, nuts, you know? Come on. But that doesn't mean that I'm like, oh, Loki's automatically a hero, you know?
It's like so many people took with Thanos after Infinity War. You can agree with a lot of his points, and yes, the movie really is his movie, but that doesn't make him the hero.
Yeah, also, don't agree with his points, because Thanos was wrong. Hashtag, Thanos was wrong. Just because you follow a character doesn't mean you have to agree with a character. Mm-hmm. A character can be entertaining and wrong. And I think that that's where I'm at on this. That this Tony Stark in this movie is a very entertaining character, and also a very, very wrong character. But also, that's the same about Hammer. Entertaining mm-hmm. character, wrong character. Benko, entertaining character, wrong character. Mm. Coulson, entertaining character, awesome character. Also, correct character. Although, maybe don't watch Super Nanny. Super Nanny's not a great show. Have better taste.
This was 2010, and that was kind of like one of the top shows on TV, and I think it was just them saying, okay, what's a popular show that we can have Coulson watch? Super Nanny. Sure, why not?
Watch better TV, Coulson. I am mildly disappointed in you. But yeah, good movie. Good entry into the MCU. Fine movie. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. So I think that's all we can say about Iron Man 2. So we are going to continue Fury's big month next week with Thor. Time to go back to the first Thor movie and see if that holds up. Yeah. Anything else?
Nope.
All right. So join us next week for Thor, and we will talk to you all then. Bye.
Don't let the magic stop here.
Join our conversation online on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic.
Twitter at Rewatch the Magic.
And of course, new episodes every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com.
Remember, the magic is for everyone.
It only stops if you let it.